You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Many make the dangerous, uncertain journey to the United States from their home country for a variety of reasons. Those who are asylum seekers or refugees fleeing countries like Afghanistan, Guatemala, Venezuela, and Syria are searching for a better and often safer life. The journey from Central America and South America is arduous, 1,800 miles from the southern Mexico border to the U.S.-Mexico border. With little to no resources for food, there are a myriad of needs for those making the trek. The Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies, CCNS, is a Nevada County-based nonprofit that has returned from helping migrants and refugees on their journey. They work to resettle Afghan families here in Sacramento, and they also helped people in Oaxaca, Mexico, as well as along the U.S.-Mexico border. Justin Gold is the founder of the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies and joins us with more about the organization's mission to provide aid to those in need. Good morning.
Hello. Welcome to you, too.
Yeah. So, Justin, you know, CCNS, the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies, is a local nonprofit based in Nevada County. What inspired you to create this organization?
Well, we began as a group of people looking to improve ourselves. And the arduous path of self-improvement is fraught with dangers of self-consumption and self-importance. And eventually we began to understand that the necessity for reaching out to people and aiding them in some very basic needs. So we were doing things for ourselves, and in that process we evolved into also helping those in need.
How many people are part of your organization, roughly? How has it grown over the years?
It hasn't grown. It's actually shrunk. Now we have a few dozen people, and probably 20 of those people are available to go on these expeditions that we go on.
Yeah, and they're really incredible, these expeditions. And you actually just returned from your first post-pandemic trip to Oaxaca, Mexico, and that lasted, I believe, about a month to help local shelter and asylum seekers fleeing their home countries. How was it returning back to these missions of service after having a few years being abruptly stopped?
Well, very rewarding, really, because when we weren't able to really do our programs of aid, we were really thrown back on ourselves. What do you want to do today? What do you need today? What movies are you going to watch today? And that gets repetitious, and that gets boring, really. So to be able to do something as rewarding as seeing the very cause and effect relief that you can get from giving somebody some fruit and water and really reassurance that people know that they're there is it's good for them and it's good for us.
Yeah. What were you learning from these people, migrants, who are making what can be a deadly journey, you know, 1,800 miles to the United States?
Well, it was an educational process for me because I knew the broad strokes, but I wasn't aware that people were coming from Africa and Europe and coming across the ocean to South America, getting jobs there, and then venturing across what's known as the Darien Gap, which is a dense jungle that cars can't go through, and contending with all kinds of difficulties, both physical and difficulties with people who are trying to take advantage of them as well. But mostly it was getting back to this was rewarding because our you might call it self-study, involves seeing the obstacles that we have that don't allow us to be a giving person. And really our thrust is twofold, to increase our ability to be giving people so that it doesn't become a chore and doesn't become a burden. It's the natural reflection of being free of those obstacles of fear and self-consumption.
Were there certain exchanges you had with people in Oaxaca that still resonate with you and touch your heart?
Well, one really rewarding one is we followed being in Oaxaca for a month to being in San Luis, which is a town on the border of Arizona where a lot of migrants cross. And I was roaming around on the U.S. side of the border and saw a couple of people, and I recognized the day packs that they had on their back. And I went over to them. I didn't recognize them in particular because we had interactions with so many people. And I saw them. I asked them where they got their day packs, and it turned out that they had successfully crossed and been given hearing dates, and they were on their way to asylum seeking in the U.S. But it's what I didn't realize, that so many of these people make the journey with the reward of being arrested at the border and then being given the attempt to plea for asylum. But so many of them are returned even the first day or the next day and have really no idea that that's what's going to happen to them. So the organizations that do exist in Central Central America and Mexico are really trying to inform these people that that is the process, and if they don't have a really good story, they're not going to be given even a chance for asylum.
Given that you've kind of seen this really come full circle from, you know, being on the U.S. side of the U.S.-Mexico border in Arizona, in Yuma County, but then also going down to southern Mexico in Oaxaca, what struck you about the people in southern Mexico, which is towards the beginning of their journey, and then when you see them at the border at the tail end?
Well, I only saw those two people, and they were very excited to have just crossed the border, legally, actually. But I can conjecture, even from seeing people in Oaxaca, that they're very tired. They're very frequently dealing with physical difficulties, as you can imagine, from having deficient diets No adequate clothing, because even though it's southern Mexico, the nights are cold, and it's really much more difficult than I had imagined it to be. So it was confronting, really, for us, and should be confronting for everyone, to see how fortunate we are and how much we really do owe to pass on some good fortune that we have in some way. And really, the thrust of our delivering this message in whatever programs we have here and this public program we have coming up is to let people know that it is really possible to pass on some of our good fortune. It doesn't take having to go far. It just has to, sometimes it has to do with just going into Subway and instead of getting a 6-inch, getting a foot long and eating half of it and finding someone who can eat the other half.
Where does that come from? I mean, not turning inward, but turning outward. And I know that your organization has, you said, has shrunk a little bit, but the work that you and your colleagues are doing is so mighty and profound, and it predates being part of this nonprofit or founding it. You founded it, but what was within you existed well before.
Actually, not. Actually, I was more of an adventure traveler, and I was definitely into getting my own kicks. And certainly I had attitudes of not hurting other people, but I certainly was not a giving person, as maybe it could be said that I am more today. So I involved myself in a process of learning the obstacles that were in my way, learning really some very basic things about blame and taking responsibility and recognizing. I just had it within the last little while. I had breakfast this morning, and some local people that I knew took me to a place of a couple of miles from here, and we were just about to walk inside, and a man walked by, and he was mumbling, you know, a person obviously down on his luck, who was mumbling and cursing and like that. And a person certainly wouldn't take that personally and think that they were being cursed at or they were being offended in any way. But if it happened on the highway and somebody pulled up next to you, we would think we were being offended. Or if it was a coworker, we would think we were being offended, but really we just happened to be there, that's all. And it's something I learned over the years, that that people have difficulties, and sometimes we're in the way of their difficulties, but it's really not our difficulty, it's their difficulty. And if we really understand that, it's much easier to feel compassion and sympathy for their situation than to take it personally. So that, and some other things that I could talk about and that I have learned, the idea taking the time to see what's happening right now, and not only living a lot of years but living a lot of moments. There's an idea of let's get this over with. You know, I walked into this building, this office, and met somebody called Sarita.
She's wonderful.
Yes, Sarita. Well, I got to meet Sarita.
One of our favorite people at Cap Radio.
One could say that Sarita was let's get this out of the way so that I can get on to the room and get on to the interview. But Sarita was there in the moment, and I got to meet her and fill out a form that she wanted me to fill out. And I thought that was interesting, that the station mm-hmm. is protecting itself in certain ways. And there's a lot of moments that can be lived if one doesn't have the mantra, let's get this out of the way, let's get this out of the way.
Yeah, experiencing moments. And what a wonderful and powerful perspective that is as well. It's given that your nonprofit, the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies, I mean, it's not only migrants who are making their way across Mexico. I mean, over the decades, you have conducted service projects in Cambodia, Thailand, and Turkey, Syrian refugees as well, helping Afghan refugees settle here in our region. How do you share this with the community? Take what you learned and all the meaning that you've gained from these experiences, and don't keep it inward, but outward. And you're showing me a peacock puppet right now.
Yeah, well, not recently, but in the last maybe 6 or 7 years of our going around and going to these areas where there is difficulty, some of them natural disaster difficulties, Katrina-type difficulties, and refugees on the Syrian border and things like that. We were donated puppets by a company that makes really beautiful puppets, a company called Folk Manus in the Bay Area. And so we learned how to use these puppets, and we started to deliver our messages through these puppets. You can say things with puppets that you really can't say straight on. People love to hear them from the beautiful puppets that we have, but sometimes have difficulty hearing these messages, especially the message of self-improvement, that you can do things for other people, but you may do it and try to rush through them, or you may do it reluctantly. But if you become a giving person, you can really do them with joy, and we do them with joy. And then there's also the children. And the children love the puppets. Not only do they love the performance that we do with the puppets, but they love to get them to meet them otherwise. So we have developed that in the last. And so in our presentations, we show slides, we show movies, and we show slides, and to really increase awareness of refugee situations and also of our deficiencies and our good fortunes. And we use puppets to tell these stories. And recently we had one of our talented members write rap songs, and they're really well done. And we use the puppets to do the rap songs. So it's very entertaining, and it's nice to have a little, sugar to help their medicine go down.
Yeah, and it is a beautiful puppet. It's a vibrant peacock, that's for sure, the one that you brought in this morning. In a few weeks, you're actually going to be having an event at the auditorium at Clara that's located in downtown Sacramento on May 2nd, I believe, and you're going to present your organization's work. What do you want people to take away from the event?
Well, there are three things, really. The most obvious and the simplest thing is that there are people in need, and it's important to recognize with those of us that have good fortune that there are people in need. And so we show these relatively dramatic videos and slides of our trips to all kinds of places, even Central Europe, and we haven't gone to some places where there are wars going on, but we go sometimes shortly thereafter, and going to the Syrian border during that difficulty. So we show pictures, and they're interesting pictures. And then of this last go around in both Oaxaca and San Luis, we have some really dynamic movies and informative stories of people who are from Africa, even, and China, who made their way to Ecuador and worked in Ecuador and then came up through there. So those videos and those pictures, and then we have our personal stories, which we take time to tell, interspersed with these videos, and then we have really a considerable amount of explanation of how we came to feel that it was necessary to do that and feel that it was natural to do that and feel the freedom to choose that alternative and take the time and spend the money to do that, because we don't charge anything, we don't raise money, and we use our own funds to do everything that we do. But we tell that story with the puppets. And it's fun, and people like it, and we're not professionals at it, so we get a lot of laughs at our bumbling forth.
Yeah. How do you achieve being self-funded?
Well, we work together, and some of us even live together, and so there's an economical advantage there. Some of us have had the good fortune to make money in the past and have saved it. And I have done a lot of different things. I've been a business owner, and I've been a financial consultant. And so I've had the opportunity to stash away some money. And this is really a wonderful way to make use of it, because how many different ways can you remodel your house, really?
Yeah. Well, Justin, thank you so much. It was wonderful sharing this moment with you.
My pleasure.
Justin Gold is the founder of the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies. It is a Nevada County-based nonprofit working to provide aid to asylum seekers and refugees. They do have an upcoming event that will be taking place in downtown Sacramento at the auditorium at Clara. It will be May 2nd. We have more information on our Insight page. Still ahead, the Sacramento History Museum asks a simple question: what do women and girls need? With answers so profound, it sparked its latest exhibit, a listening circle that transformed into a vibrant quilt with voices spanning 15 to 85 years of age. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.